take privilege of the chairman to ask the first question, and it's precisely about opaqueness. And recent events in the evening of September 6th and 7th of this year, in which we are told by some that Israel took military action against a Syrian facility, which even some say was a nuclear facility. And I'd be interested in what lessons you think that we can draw from that experience for what might be done about an Iranian nuclear program. And in particular, there are reports which suggest that there was, depending upon which report you believe, some degree of consultation between the U.S. and the Israeli governments about this intelligence and even some disagreements and in some consultation about this strike. So what lessons would you draw from that experience about how the Washington and Jerusalem will consult if it looks like the Iranian nuclear program has become particularly troubling? Perhaps Chuck?
Okay, Patrick has raised what is obviously a very good question. But I think it's a case of similarity which is more superficial than substantive. The two cases look similar in the sense that the attack in Iran is reported to have been, in Syria, is reported to have been against a nuclear facility. Well, A, we don't know that. B, we know virtually nothing about what happened there. And more importantly, this was a case that was right on Israel's border. It's easy to get there. Syria has no major capabilities of retaliating, certainly against the United States, and only a limited capability, if at all, to retaliate against Israel. The regional repercussions were virtually non-existent. It's very different in the case of Iran. An attack in Iran, regardless of who does it, if the man on the moon did it, the United States will be blamed. If it's Israel and if Israel does it, the United States, vice versa. It doesn't matter who does it. The ramifications will be regional. They will be very broad. Iran does have the capability to respond significantly, I think, in a major way against Israel. And I think it has a more limited capability to respond against the United States than is somewhat than is often portrayed in the U.S. I think it's much more limited. But I think the cases are really so different that they don't truly bear comparison.
I agree with that assessment, so there's no point in me duplicating it again.
Great. So let's start over here, please. And please lean into the microphones that's on your table.
Rafi Danziger from APAC. I think one of the questions that arose from the NIE is what effect this will have on economic sanctions. Some might say that since now they are not working on a nuclear weapon, then you can relax and everything is going to be fine. And another school of thought would say that since NIE said that the reason that they stopped the program in 2003 was because of sanctions, therefore we need to continue with the sanctions or even perhaps toughen them further. And I would like to hear the opinions of both panelists, if possible, on what you think will happen to the sanction regime.
Rafi, I think it's absolutely predictable what will happen is the United States, the French, the British, and the Israelis will all argue that this clearly is a case for continuing sanctions and intensifying sanctions because they seem to work. The Russians, the Chinese, probably the Germans and the Italians will probably argue that there's much less case now for taking action immediately. So there'll be a split, and there'll be a split within Europe. So I don't think we'll see much traction, frankly, unless the French and the British go it alone.
Since I completely agree with that, there's no point in my restating.
At least I have both of you. What the heck? I'm David Pollack.
Thanks. I wonder if any of the panelists would care to address the question that I've already seen raised in the Middle East media, both Arab and Israeli, which is, has this change in the official American intelligence assessment derived really from some new intelligence or some better interpretation, or is it a reflection of some political or bureaucratic or policy maneuvers inside the U.S. administration? And if so, What does that tell us about the prospects for American-Israeli dialogue on this issue and for the overall credibility of American policy? Thank you.
Well, David, as I said, I think this is really a very interesting question. That's why I sort of said it's an 18-month period where something clearly changed. And until we know what those factors were, I mean, it's pure speculation. I mean, I think the other factor is that clearly the colossal mistakes made over Iraq have been the influencing factor in anything that's written about Iran. But I would have to think that this really is a new source of intelligence, because it is so counterintuitive to everything that has been said by the administration up to now. And for them to come out like this when they and produce this suggests to me that there's something very important going on here, and that it is more than just political maneuvering. That's why I think it's very important to wait to see what Mr. Barak and the Israeli colleagues have to say, and whether they have the same sources that we do.
I basically agree with Jeff. There's all sorts of potential conspiracy-type theories for why this came out and the way it came out, when it came out. I tend to think that this kind of thing, which is so explosive, which runs so counter to everything that we've known at least for the last 4 years, I tend to think that there's good new information, and that's what stands behind it. Now, I said before in my introductory remarks that we have to wait to see what the Israeli take on this is as well, because Israel does, for very good reason, take a more worst-case approach than the United States does and tends to be somewhat more dubious. The stakes here are much higher for Israel, so it can less afford to be wrong about this. But I would imagine that if the president has been convinced by this, then it's reasonable to presume that Israel will be also. Now, the ramifications of that for Israel are simply enormous. It means that there is no longer any existential threat to the nation's security. It means that Israel's security situation has changed radically overnight, that other threats which will continue unabated, such as Hezbollah, Hamas, other terrorist organizations, the Syrian-Iranian alliance, all of these issues, all of these threats continue, but their overall importance is very different when they're no longer allied with an Iran which is soon to become nuclear.
I would disagree with both of the other two speakers. If we go back and take a look at U.S. statements over the last 5 years, they've been quite consistent in saying that Iran had a nuclear weapons program in the 1990s and early 2000 framework. But I'm not aware of many statements that the United States government made about ongoing Iranian nuclear weapons activities. We would say that on the basis of what we knew about what they were doing back then, we're confident that they must be continuing today, which, as I'm on the record in saying many times in print, and it was a stupid thing to say, because the intelligence that we revealed previously was about what we knew they were doing at one point in time. We did not reveal intelligence about what we knew that they were continuing ongoing activities. And the few times in which we suggest the IEA that they go explore about ongoing activities, the IEA came back and reported, nope, not there. Furthermore, I would disagree with the implication that we can draw any confidence in this report that Iran's not pursuing nuclear weapons. Because, in fact, I never thought Iran had a nuclear weapons program. I thought that Iran was in a headlong effort to make fissile material and would be smart enough to wait until it got close to having the stuff before it would make a breakout. And it is still the case that if Iran wishes to make nuclear weapons as rapidly as it possibly can, it is doing what it should be doing, which is not having a nuclear weapons program, but concentrating and producing the fissile material. And when it gets close to making the fissile material, then start doing the breakout. So indeed, this report suggests that Iran is engaged in a headlong rush to get fissile material, which is inconsistent with any peaceful interpretation of what Iran is doing. So I don't think that this report is that dramatic a change from what we've been saying in the past. You have to carefully parse what this report says and what we were saying in the past to notice that, because we were certainly giving a very different interpretations of what we were saying. We're good at that. But in fact, when you get right, peel it back, peel the onion back and see what's really there, you see it's not really very different from what we were saying in the past. And when you ask, what does this say about Iranian intentions, when you peel that one back, you discover also it's really not very different. But that's my cynical viewpoint. Ian.
Ian Lesser from the German Marshall Fund. I was wondering whether either one of you might want to comment on the effects of this new NIE on the debate that was started maybe 3 years ago but didn't go anywhere on the possibility of actually opening a broad, strategic, comprehensive dialogue with Iran on sort of the whole thing, soup to nuts, in which the nuclear issue might be part of that. We never took that up here. Will this change the dynamics at all? Maybe for a new administration?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I, for one, always, well, at least for the last few years, was an ardent advocate of a U.S.-Iranian dialogue. I would have put anything and everything just about on the table, and I would have been willing to offer the Iranians virtually any concession they wanted in exchange for giving up the nuclear program. I thought it was that important. I didn't think that it was going to work. And I actually saw the dialogue as a necessary way station on the way to then looking at the other options. Well, this now indicates that they are more amenable to pressure and maybe inducements. Maybe if this is the case now, if the level of pressure that was out there till now, which frankly wasn't very high, if that produced the desired outcome, then maybe you don't have to offer more inducements, and maybe it's not as necessary. On the other hand, if the Iranians really, and I always thought that they really do want to be part of the international, a legitimate part of the international community and not a pariah, maybe this is an indication, a further indication of the importance of talking with them. Jeff? I'm sure you
Well, I don't have much to add to that. I mean, I would think, Ian, it has to be seen in the broader context of what's happening in Iraq. And I would note that according to the NIE, it was in 2003 that the Iranians decided this wasn't such a good idea, and that was at the, during a period when we were looking rather strong and formidable. And you can make the case that Iran has responded diplomatically in both positive and negative ways, dependent upon how successful or unsuccessful the United States has been in Iraq. And I think if you make the case that right now this is a period where there's a little more optimism, then certainly I could see some willingness on the part of some Iranians to talk to us, and they must be puzzled about Syria and what's going on in Lebanon and the Annapolis meetings. And so I don't think it's inconceivable that there could be some change in the behavior, but I don't see it from the current president of Iran. I think he has to go first.
By the way, if I may note, the a halt in the Iranian nuclear weapons program referred to in the NIE occurs approximately 5 months after the rejection of the famous May 2003 offer. So some people have said that the May 2003 offer was a magnificent opportunity which was missed, and that what a great shame that was, because we could have so affected Iranian behavior. In fact, 5 months after this great opportunity was missed, we are now told Iran stopped its nuclear weapons program. I leave it to you to judge, therefore, what a great opportunity was missed in May 2003. Steve.
To take a really gloomy view, the nuclear hardliner in Iran could look out at all these facts right now and say, we've got a few years home free. We have an election coming in the United States. Bush can't do anything militarily between now and then. Everyone seems to agree. The Democrats, if they come in, are going to spend the first 24 months, you know, exhausting themselves on a diplomatic surge that will probably lead nowhere. In Israel, Ehud Olmert has his hands full under any circumstances, and this slows down further probably any thoughts over there of something decisive. They're going to have an election too. If it's Netanyahu, his priority is going to be the Palestinian question and the territories, and he may very well be tied down in a different way. So we have 24, maybe 36 months. The Europeans, you already said, are not likely to be able to unite around new sanctions. This is great.
Joe, I mean, you can make that case, but I'm certain there are countervailing arguments that will be heard also in Iran. I mean, yes, there may not be new sanctions, but I don't think there's going to be any talk of removing the current sanctions. That I don't think there's going to be any lessening of the financial pressure that we're putting on the Iranians. So the Iranian economy is not in great shape. I mean, there's another side to it that I'm certain you'll hear, but I'm certain the point of view you expressed, Steve, is expressed by the hardliners.
There is good news here, and let's not also be those who can't take yes for an answer. Many of us hoped that if sufficient pressure was exerted, the Iranians would respond, and this is an indication that they indeed have. Now, this whole thing is very, very new. We have to understand really what exactly it reflects, to what extent it really is an administration-wide assessment, to what extent it's shared by Israel. But at the very least, we seem to have gained many months, if maybe even a few years of time. That is a very good thing. Some people were thinking of a military operation only because it would buy us a few years. Well, here, just through diplomatic pressure, we may have achieved another few years. So, I mean, I think this is a good thing. Let's look at it a bit more, and let's be willing to hopefully take the good with a big grain of skepticism. But
can't see around the corner there.
Yes.
There's a microphone back there. Use that.
I'll talk about it. I missed the beginning of the talk, so forgive me. How could we have been so misled? You know, the Iranian president has been talking about the point of no return has already been reached. You know, they have the centrifuges. You know, why would they be saying that they have the nuclear weapons when the NIE is now saying they stopped 4 years ago? Why would they have stopped 4 years ago and not gotten anything in return for it? It's hard to believe. Do you believe the NIE? But my other important question is for Jeff. What about China and India? I want to talk about China and India.
Yes.
What cooperation could we have gotten or could we get in the future from them to put pressure on Iran to stop pursuing nuclear weapons? Since I understand India does a lot of refining of oil, I think, for Iran, and China, of course, buys a lot of the oil.
If I may say a word about the first question. This report suggests that Iran's drive to acquire nuclear weapons has not slowed one day. The long pole in the tent is the production of HEU. This report repeats much the same analysis about when will Iran have HEU available. The short pole in the tent is making a weapon. Mohammad al-Baradei's estimate is that when Iran completes its facilities, it will take, quote, only a few months, end of quote, for Iran to have a bomb. Having a nuclear weapons program now is not necessary to having a bomb in 2010. This news about the halt in the weapons program is encouraging, but it does not slow down one day Iran's drive towards getting a nuclear weapon. Because making a weapon is not the hard part. Making the fissile material is the hard part.
Let me say a word about China and India. They both have growing interests in Iran, particularly in the energy sector. India and Pakistan have drawn up very elaborate plans to build a gas pipeline, land from Iran to India via Pakistan, but it hasn't started yet because we put great pressure on it. But I don't think we should underestimate our own leverage here. I mean, China's priority in the Middle East is economic, and China has been very good at being nice to everybody. I mean, and so was India, by the way. I mean, it's difficult to think of two countries that have excellent relations with virtually every country in the region, including Israel, Iran, the Palestinians, you name it. And they do not want to see a major crisis. They do not want to see conflict because that will have a profound impact on them economically. Now, you know, what leverage do we have on them? We have quite a lot of leverage on them if we were prepared to use it. The problem with this administration, quite frankly, is that it's never really decided how important this Iran issue is. I mean, if they had really put this at the top of the priority of our concerns, then we would have treated Russia very differently. But instead, this administration seems to have about four or five priorities and can never sort out which one's the most important. And until they work that out, the sort of the real-world trade-offs in terms of great power relationships don't happen. And we get bemused when the Russians start getting angry with us when we say we want you to help us with Iran, and then we send Dick Cheney to Vilnius to start vilifying Mr. Putin. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me geopolitically, but in theory, we do have much more leverage than we give ourselves credit for.
The Iranians responded by... The Iranians responded by saying, "We told you so." Would this perhaps create an opportunity for increased pressure on them to take another look at the Russian offer to enrich all the uranium Iran needs?
First of all, the report says in explicit terms that they had a nuclear weapons program until 2003. So all it's saying is that they've been on better behavior for the last 4 years, that they haven't dismantled an illegal program, that they had one. So this is, at very best, a partial pardon. It's not even a partial pardon. I don't see how it really relates to the Russian offer, but Jeff, do you?
No, I agree with that.
And I'd be very surprised if Iran said, "We told you so," because that would mean that Iran told us that they had a nuclear weapons program.
Right.
And I'm not aware that the Iranian government has yet acknowledged it had a nuclear weapons program. Had Iran, in fact, in 2003, told us that, "Oh, by the way, we did have a nuclear weapons program. It was wrong. We're sorry. That was a big mistake. We shouldn't have done that. And you caught us at it, and we're going to stop it," I suspect there would not have been the international will for a process of pressing Iran about its enrichment. Because had Iran come clean, I suspect it would have gotten away with having an enrichment program. But because they did not come clean, either about their enrichment program or about their covert nuclear weapons program, we were able to construct a broad international consensus to contain them. And it, indeed, that did not serve the interests of this regime well. They would have done much better to have done a mea culpa, mea culpa, mea culpa, and then they could have gotten away with bloody blue murder. But I'm reminded of that wonderful prayer from the fifth Imam, "Praise be you, O Lord, for giving us such stupid enemies." All the way in back, please.
Yes, James Lindsay from the Institute. I was struck by the discussion of the potential retaliation against an Israeli attack on nuclear facilities in Iran. Do you really think that the Iranians would be able to attack Israel given the concerns you've mentioned, the difficulties Israelis would have attacking Iran, would the Iranians be able to attack Israel, given the same technical problems, I would assume, getting back and forth, firstly? And secondly, do you think that the Iranians would, in the case of an Israeli attack, would they want to take the chance of attacking the United States, which then might make it very easy for the United States to defend itself? In other words, the president, who now would have great difficulty going to war with Iran if there were 20 or 30,000 soldiers killed in Iraq by rockets from Iran, might find it very easy to attack Iran. Thank you.
I think the Iranians will probably respond against Israel to the greatest extent they can. And I don't think we're talking the same constraints that you were mentioning that apply to Israel. First of all, the Iranian Air Force capability is very limited. Their response would probably be by missiles, and I think they would launch whatever they have, at least there's a chance of that. Secondly, their response would be from Lebanon via Hezbollah, which is a Iranian proxy. It has also over the years become a clear part of Lebanese society, but it was established by Iran, is to this day armed, trained, and operationally guided largely by Iran, Syria as well. And according to all the reports, they have rebuilt their rocket capability to an even greater size than it was before the 2006 war. So I imagine that Israel will be blanketed by a missile attack. And there are also a variety of additional ways that Iran can respond against Israel, with various terror attacks against Israeli targets around the world. Certainly can further encourage Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad to do things as well. Against the United States, I doubt highly that there would be a direct response against America. That sounds like a recipe for suicide. And yes, playing right into the hands of your enemies. On the other hand, there are various other ways that they can do things which will be quite painful for the U.S., such as causing grief in Iraq, such as terrorist acts against United States related targets abroad, and maybe some terrorist attacks against the U.S. Within the U.S. as well. At the same time, I think that various assessments in the U.S. of what the Iranians could do are overblown. There will probably be some responses, and they may have some unpleasant consequences. I don't think they can do anything major against the United States. I'm also, by the way, totally unimpressed by the threats that various Iranian spokesmen have made about using the oil weapon. They can drive the price of oil up even higher. A couple of years ago, if you had said to someone we'd be paying $100 a gallon oil, we'd have thought that person had lost it. And, well, it may go up even higher. But let's really be frank here, who's got the stick and who doesn't. If the Iranians cut off their oil, or if the United States and West decide to cut off imports of Iranian oil or cut off exports of refined oil to Iran, the Iranian economy can be shut down in very short order.
I want to thank you both, and I suspect we're going to be back to the subject in the future.